If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
The Honorable Justice Mary Marubio, a circuit judge and the acting presiding judge in the pretrial division of Cook County, is on the phone. Judge, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
What's it like now? Is the business of the courthouse or the courtrooms any different this week or last week than it was before the no cash bail provision went into effect?
So there's definitely a change in attitude and demeanor among the judges, law enforcement, and our attorneys. There's an excitement, a momentum, and some reinvigoration in terms of the quality of lawyering. But at the same time, one of the remarks I've been getting over the past week from everyone is, hey, this is pretty much the same.
You just said a reinvigoration of the process of lawyering. What does that mean?
It means better arguments. It means more robust hearings. Really thoughtfulness going into these processes. I think we, to some degree, you do something for 6-7 years, and it becomes a little robotic, and there's a whole bunch of new energy at play.
Mm. The Chicago Take today on the business in the court, sponsored by HaggertyAutoGroup.com. Will you sound pleased, but also almost enthusiastic about this? I thought that it would be more time-consuming, and that the onus on the judges would be greater now, that maybe you all would not like to have been, if not put in the spotlight, at least having your decisions, your personal decisions, more consequential, because there's no, well, I'm not sure, let's just make them post bail.
So that's right. We no longer have that crutch, and not just judges. Prosecutors don't have that crutch. They can't ask for money bail if they don't have the evidence to move for detention. And the defense attorneys don't have that crutch to ask for money when they don't want their client detained.
Yeah.
That's off the table. So that lends itself, I think, to these more deliberative, more robust hearings.
Is it taking more time?
It is taking more time, but we were prepared for that. In our courthouse now, we have a separate room for the detention hearings. So we used to do them in the same room as the initial appearance hearings or the release hearings. But now release hearings are in one room, and detentions have been moved to another room so that that judge can focus on, and right now it's been 4 or 5 petitions a day, can focus on those 4 or 5 hearings.
You don't feel hamstrung? That is, one of the concerns was that the law was not robust enough. The judges would not have the authority to order people withheld, that they would have to release them. This was the concern of many of the state's attorneys. How has that been playing out?
So under the old law, there's some credence to that argument. Under the old law, there were a subset of charges that qualified for something called a mandatory no-bail hold upon certain amount of evidence being put forward. And those were charges that carried with them the possibility of a natural life sentence. That has been removed, and those cases have now been moved into the column of the detention petition. So that has been taken away from the judge, that portion. But those are the cases that are most likely to have a petition filed. First-degree murder, third-class X felony, the worst of the worst, so to speak. It is the process now, and was before, that to detain someone or hold them without bail needed to be initiated by the state. So that has not changed, actually.
Needed to be initiated by the state. Well, is the state being more aggressive about that?
I think the biggest operational change for us is what we're seeing in the domestic violence courtrooms. My division operates 2 of those courtrooms on the weekends. We're countywide on the weekends and citywide during the week. I think over the weekend, first of all, we do have an initial appearance release domestic violence call, and then we have a detention domestic violence call. And one of our judges, Judge Ortiz, was there over the weekend, and I think she did 15, maybe 17 detention petitions in that room. Really significant increase, considering those were never filed on before. They couldn't be.
And mostly it appears, I won't comment on those, and I know you won't either, but it seems to me like generally people do get released with the pledge that they will reappear in court for their trial.
That's the presumption and the default under the statute, correct?
And maybe we've just never focused on this before. And in the past, maybe the people were posting bond anyway, and they were able to get out. But when I see DUIs or people firing a gun in the direction of people or at animals or pepper spraying police, I'm just in my mind going through some of the cases. Sure. Somebody who slapped a child and seemed to be violent. In all of these cases that I've described, the people have been said, okay, you have to come back to court for trial, but we're not going to jail you. Give me a little context about
sure.
whether or not those sorts of people should be jailed pending their trial.
Well, let's talk about what the statute was 2 weeks ago. Those people would have been most likely, in most of those cases, released with conditions, but one of those conditions would have been money, that they had to come up with some money. And let's really clarify this issue. Money is no longer a condition of release. Those were still release orders. A D bond was an order to release that person, and petitions would not have been filed on the majority of those people. But now that we don't have that crutch, this delineation is clearer, but we're going through the same analysis that we've always gone through. And that is for each case, and remember, it's individualized. So while the charge may be the same for two or three different people, the individualized factors about them and about their risk of releasing them is different. So we're looking at their background in its entirety. Adult felony convictions, juvenile adjudications, whether they have a history of complying with conditions of release, have they violated the prior probation and order of protection, are they currently on pretrial release, probation or parole, and then we look at the other factors that we have to balance it with. Is there an identifiable victim that needs to be protected during pretrial release? And again, these factors apply to each defendant differently.
I thought that was changed, though, to the community in general.
So that can be a factor as well.
It would seem to me like that is no small consideration. I mean, maybe they're not going to fire a gun at that guy that I can identify, but they've already fired a gun at somebody. Maybe they fire a gun at anybody. So that person should not be released to the community.
So among those considerations, of course, would be the weight of the evidence and the identification of the defendant, the circumstances of the arrest. The quality of that identification is incredibly important on the front end of determining a detention petition, because the state has to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the proof is evident that that's the person who committed the offense for the purposes of detention. Then from there, you look at the person's background, and then based on their background, whether any conditions can be fashioned. And if people appear before the court with no background, with no history with the court system, that's a very difficult prong for us to balance.
In other words, this electronic monitoring or something else to make sure that they appear in court. But put it this way, if all of these instances I've described, and I believe that most of the people who appear before you are in fact guilty, but they have not been proven guilty.
Correct.
If we did start to err on the side of let's just put these people in jail, those kids that closed off downtown Chicago, jumping up and down on cars, damn it, put them in jail until we find them guilty of something. If we did that, I wonder what would happen to the jails. Is that a concern of yours? Do we have space for all the people that a lot of people want to see put in jail pending trial?
So I don't know what the ultimate capacity of Cook County Jail is or what their staffing
That's not something
is.
You think about when you're determining.
It's not. It is not.
And one last thing. I don't know if you know the answer to this either, but are more dangerous people on the streets now than were prior? Again, the concerns of many of the state's attorneys.
So I don't know that can be quantified. I think that the chief judge's office had been tracking data for years. I've been in this division 6 years, and they track failure to appear rates and new violent criminal offenses. And those numbers had been steady for some time.
Yeah.
Going forward, that's going to keep being analyzed, and that will be the success or failure of this law.
Do you worry about your decisions now more than you did beforehand?
No. I've always been concerned about making the right decision in that case each day. And I speak for all of my colleagues, whether they're in child protection, domestic violence, whatever their assignment, we deal with some pretty heavy facts, some very terrible human behavior. And I know that all of us try to make the right decision each day.
I'm glad you're doing what you do, Judge Mary Marubio, Circuit Judge, Acting Presiding Judge in the Pretrial Division of Cook County. This has been very helpful to us. I hope we can have a conversation like this, maybe when some of the facts come out,
sure.
Some of those statistics.
Thanks. Come back anytime. I appreciate the opportunity.
Likewise.